Right. This is Rachel Schultz on November 13th, 2014. I'm sitting down with Gloria Rocha, and we're just going to be talking about her involvement within the Southwest Detroit community. All right, so Gloria, can you tell me a little bit about your family origins?
Well, I was born in November in a little town called Croswell. It's up in the Thumb. And that was one of the years that our family decided not to go back to Texas because my mom was pregnant. And so our background has been working in the fields. That's what we first got contracted for. My parents are from San Antonio area, Texas. And my grandfather, one of my grandfathers, is from Laredo, Texas. And then I have a grandmother that is from Gonzales, Mexico, and another set of grandparents that are from Morelia, Michoacán. So they all came over and did work and stuff during that time. There was not immigration issues like there are now. So basically that's my family history is in that area. I am one of six children.
Big family. Mm-hmm. going on to your education, what kind of education did you receive?
A lot. It seemed like every time we moved from crop to crop and we went into schools, we went to many different schools. So they always had to assess what I knew so they knew what grade to put me in. Like, and so when I was in Texas, they advanced me because I had some key educational things that they did not have. And so then I came back to Michigan and they had to test me to make sure that the advancement was legit. So I went to a lot of different schools, and I enjoyed it. I think it's all different kinds of people that you meet in the different communities, so it was fun. But I really never felt like I was part of something because of the fact that we moved so much. And when I was in Texas, my friends would call me gringa because I had less of an accent. When I was in Michigan, of course, they felt that I had a very strong accent, even though I'm the same person. although I did pick up a Texas drawl when I was in Texas, and then brought it back, and I lose it and go back again. Yeah. But that was the early years. I did graduate from Michigan's school, Croswell Lexington, and was able to get a scholarship to go to Michigan State. So that's how I started my education at Michigan State. And then, of course, I met the love of my life. Got married, and we moved to California. So I continued a little bit of my education in California. And then we came back to Michigan, and I continued my education after three kids and graduated from Michigan State and started teaching there for a while.
Very cool. Yeah. What brought you back? Did you come back for work opportunities?
No, my husband had decided to get a master's. And so we applied in different places. He applied in different places. And Michigan State made him a very good offer. So it was a choice between going to California College or back to Michigan. And he felt, well, let's just go back to Michigan. He was from California.
Oh, okay.
But he said, you know, that Michigan State had been good to him when he was here. Mm-hmm. And so given that he didn't want to be here, he still was able to get the classes and graduate. So that was a decision we made to come back. And especially with married housing and stuff, with three kids and everything else, it worked out good.
Good, yeah. Good. So when did you finally make your way to Detroit?
Well, let's see. We were working in Lansing, and my husband was a social worker, had some master's in social work, and had come across, we used to have committees, well not committees, well groups of that we belonged to. One of them was a Latino Social Workers Association that was started. And so he started meeting other social workers from different parts of Michigan. And during one of those meetings, he was offered a position in Detroit. And so we talked about it, went back and forth, and he decided that, you know, it might not be a bad idea. And we said, fine, it's closer to Croswell.
Yes.
So we decided to move to Detroit. And then, of course, it was difficult. I had to stay there because I had a contract, so I had to finish out my contract.
Oh, yeah.
So for about 6 months, we commuted back and forth. And then we were both here.
Okay. Good. Well, it looks like you've got lots of positions that you've held within the community in the past and in the present. So can you tell me a little bit about some of them?
I think what prompted my involvement had to do with the fact that Detroit Public Schools was not very open to Hispanics. It was very selective. I had experience and I had my degrees, and of course it was, I also had a minor in bilingual education, so I was bilingual and stuff. But when I went to apply, they said they were not taking any applications. So I said, okay, what am I going to do now? But, you know, I took some little jobs. I even did some, took a job as a waitress and stuff, and just to be involved in something. The kids were in school. Mm-hmm. During that period, then I started volunteering at La Sed first, right here across the street. I volunteered, and then they offered me a position on the board. And so I got a little bit more involved, and then I ended up being offered, I volunteered with the schools, and I got offered a position with the State Department of Education.
Okay.
So instead of teaching, I went with the State Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And that opened up some other doors for volunteering, other agencies, other avenues, parent groups, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, then it became part of my life.
It's all about who you know.
Yeah, and it was interesting because as I'm with the state, I worked with the desegregation court case. And during that period, there was a lot of busing back and forth of different groups from here to further down to 4217, and vice versa. So there was a lot of interchange, including my own kids. But as I met the different personnel at the schools, they kept saying, where did you come from? You know, and they started asking. I tell them, well, yeah, we have positions here. Why didn't you come to the schools? Because my process was that you went to the administration and you applied there. You didn't go to the schools. Apparently, it was an unspoken way of getting hired. It was going directly to the schools. I didn't do that.
No.
And of course, since I was monitoring them, they had hoped that I would be on the other side instead. It was funny. It was a joke, you know. Yeah, if you had been hired, you wouldn't be checking us off. But it was an interesting 10 years of working with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. And then let's see. You were a board member, or you are currently a board member of the Southwest Detroit Development Corporation. Does that sound familiar, or no?
Well, not now.
Not now, but you were.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were some of your motivations for becoming a board member?
If it was an area that I had some interest in, there's a lot of volunteer opportunities all over. But if it had to do with community development, it had to do with safety, or education, those are the kind of volunteer things that I like to do.
Yeah.
And so basically that's, and lately I've been doing a little bit of arts and culture, but for the most part, it's safety, community development, and now arts, because my granddaughters are part of a performing group, so that gets me a little bit more interested.
Yeah. That's always fun.
Yeah, it's always fun to see them up there doing their thing.
Yeah. What do they do?
They are part of a group called Ballet Folklorico, Raíces Mexicanas. It's a folkloric dance group, and it's been around since 1981.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's got a place in the history of Southwest Detroit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm glad that we're still working with them to continue it, because having roots as part of your lifestyle in your culture, I think makes a better person and makes you appreciate who you are.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you are a part of the Mexican Patriotic Committee of Metro Detroit.
Yep.
And can you describe a little bit of your role?
I am a vice chair, one of the vice chairs. And what we do now is basically just the Cinco de Mayo parade. But in previous, when I first started, we used to have three or four festivals a year. And we used to have the Cinco de Mayo parade and festival. And what it involves is celebrating the Battle of Puebla. Mm-hmm. And so the parade has become, at one time, probably bigger than the Thanksgiving parade. Almost as, I would say that we matched it pretty close.
Oh, wow.
There were two or three big people, and it's a 2 mile. It's a 2 mile trip, and so we had a lot of excitement, because then after the parade, then they would go to the festival, which was right here in Clark Park, and the parade ended here, so that park got packed with people. I think it was celebrated. I think it started in the 30s, actually in the 20s, and then they filed for recognition with the state in the 30s. But part of it had to do with survival. When we came to work in Michigan, it was not necessarily one of the big populations, Hispanic populations in the area. We did not have all the stores, all the food, all the different, like we do now, restaurants and stuff. And so, as the families came, they would bring stuff, and then, you know, they get together, or they order, or they go to Chicago, and so that was like a matter of maintaining relationships with your community, so they wouldn't feel so strange in this foreign land.
Well, that's important.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and it was the Mexican Patriotic Committee, the people that were in it had been here a long time, you know, and they had come and they felt like foreigners in their own land and stuff. So this was a way of getting together and keep networking so that they would keep tabs on each other.
Yeah.
And help each other.
It's a good way to do it, though.
Yeah, so that's how it started, and then they started celebrating weddings and quinceañeras and baptisms and stuff, and then they expanded into the festivals. Well, you know, we celebrate Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, yeah.
So let's do a dance. Let's do this. Let's do that.
Yeah. Do you get like the ballet folklore to come in and?
Yeah, they're part of the parade and they perform.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's got to be rewarding. Seeing
yes, it is.
Granddaughters, yeah. A part of the tradition.
Oh yeah.
So, how have you expanded your role, your personal role, within the committee?
The committee?
Yeah.
I started out as a volunteer.
Okay.
And then got elected for a while as chair. And then as my other volunteer opportunities came about, I decided that it was better for me to take a lesser role, because my time was less. And so I became vice chair. So no, all my boards and whatever, I always start out as a volunteer because that gives me an opportunity to see if this is something that I want to do and it's something that I can support.
Yeah.
And then follow through.
Okay. So like, what are some of the different things that you tackle as specifically as vice chairman?
Right now we are looking at, I deal with the city.
Okay.
And that has been very difficult in getting permits, getting the application filled out and whatever. And as the different administrations have changed, it has become a little bit more paper-oriented, more permits, more fees, more everything. So that's my role, basically, is battling with the city officials to see what's going on. Going to the city council, getting the permit approved, and then meeting whatever requirements they have.
Don't envy your job.
No, it's not fun.
No.
But I guess the satisfaction is once it's all done, then you say, oh, it's thank God it's over. Now we can enjoy it.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What can you talk a little bit about the clave, the Latino
clave?
Artist? Clave, yes, I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's an acronym, and it is something new that has been coming around. Part of it is that funding sources are always looking for collaboratives. It's gotten more and more. It's almost become a requirement that you are a collaborative. Unfortunately, we have different artists. We probably have one of the largest areas of artists in the city of Detroit. We have all kinds of artist organizations. And part of that had to come about because they kept saying that we don't work together, that we don't work together. They couldn't fund this and they couldn't fund that because we don't work together. So we formed this organization called Clavet. It's visual and performing arts organizations and groups so that we can do a collaborative. We do workshops like for Day of the Dead. We have speakers come in and talk about the different art forms that are coming maybe to the DIA or something. In fact, we just finished a Day of the Dead project with the DIA with altars from the DIA put out an RFP for people to put forth some kind of an altar for Day of the Dead, and they had an exhibit for 5 days, I think it was. And so we did one of those altars. We worked with them to talk about it, and then of course the group performed. And they got the skeleton faces and the white dresses, and they looked like spirits walking through the area.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. So you know that group is hard because probably harder than any group I work with is because artists will be artists.
Yep.
And they all have their little favorites things and whatever, and their media is more important than this media and so on and so forth. So, but it, you know, in the end it does work together. It does do, when we do have a project, we do come together to do it.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Are you guys doing anything? I know there's a Frida Kahlo Diego Rivera exhibit coming.
We just submitted it, yes.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, we've come up with a couple of ideas, including a storefront area of when Diego and Frida were here.
Okay.
And when they came to visit the Southwest, what stores did they go to? What restaurants did they go to? Mm-hmm. What food did they eat? And stuff like that. So that's our proposal. Let's hope it's being flushed out. But
cool.
That's a concept.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I'll go visit.
Well, and then there was some interest in having taking opportunity where we have the silhouettes of Diego and Frida, either together or separate, and people can put their faces in there and take the pictures. That was one concept. The other one was, let's have some clothes of that era and have people dress up and take pictures. So we don't know which one is going to go.
Yeah.
But something like that, that people can take back as a memory.
Something hands-on. Mm-hmm. A little bit more than just walking through and looking.
Yeah, we're also looking. I think Frida did a cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at the possibility of doing a taste fest of some kind, like on a certain, like on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we'll offer a taste of some of the recipes from her book.
That's a nice idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, we're always thinking of something.
Right, yeah.
And
well,
it's so labor intensive.
Well, all of the ideas sound fantastic.
What comes out of it is something else.
Yes. and then, so that's Clave. And then the Latino Women's Association, the MANA?
MANA, yeah.
Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, and MANA has been around, I would say, 40, 50 years. It's a national organization with chapters in almost all the states. And our chapter here has been very involved in trying to do scholarships for young ladies and providing them with opportunities to visit Washington and see our government at work, which may or may not be a good idea. and also some workshops on building confidence and being self-sufficient. We have an annual luncheon, which is coming up November 20th, and I'm in charge of I was in charge of the invite, as well as now the program, and I do that for them.
So all of these different organizations and collaboratives, it sounds like they're all very different, but all work towards the same goals.
They are different in maybe in what they do, but not in mission. In mission, the mission I think of all of them is to make Hispanic or Latino Southwest Detroit more visible, improve opportunities for the people. They're all kind of leading towards making life better for Southwest Detroit and its people. So they are different in what they do, but the mission is to self-development, self-determination.
What do you think? Do you think that that might have drawn you to these organizations based on your education background?
Could be, yeah. I guess it could be. I guess there are a lot of performing arts groups. There's a lot of women groups. But these were the ones that I got attracted to.
It says also that you've worked with like the Metro Michigan Metro Girl Scouts,
mm-hmm.
and the YWCA.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me about your role in those organizations?
I think the YWCA was an effort to try and preserve some of the programs that were happening and also to help recruit our youngsters, our young ladies, to participate and also to find other resources available to us. The Michigan Metro Girl Scouts was in a transitional stage when I was asked to serve on that. It was trying to see if they could outreach to other populations. So I came in at the right time, and I worked with the new director. In fact, Penny Baylor was my first director that I worked with. And we worked to set up a Latino or Latina group that would be catering to the traditions and the values of that population, not the traditional Girl Scout self-cookies and all that kind of stuff. if they chose to do that, that was fine, but it was more having to deal with mother-daughter relationships, mm-hmm. and having the meetings in areas that would be not necessarily threatening. A lot of them are in schools and not necessarily the meeting places, mm-hmm. but for the Hispanic family to let their daughters go someplace, it has to be something that they feel good about. So sometimes they were in people's houses, sometimes they were in one of the schools or one of the agencies, and it had a different program. So I think that that's why I was drawn to that, mm-hmm. that organization, is because they were trying to adapt and modify the operations to meet the needs of our community.
Okay. Comes back to safety.
Yes. And, you know, as when I was working with the Detroit Monitoring Commission, one of the hardest things was to get people to leave. Like, they had school opportunities, like at Breithoff. They have the food service programs at Davis Vocational School on the east side. They had to do it airplanes and all kinds of mechanical stuff, and our kids wouldn't go.
Oh, no,
the parents wouldn't let them to get on the bus to go that far to the east side or to the northwest side, to Breithoff, and to the other vocational schools. It took a lot of time to get them training. It was because how did they get, if something happens, how would they get there?
Right.
To deal with it. So. That was one of the big issues, and so that was why the Girl Scouts made sure that it was in what was considered a safe area. Mm-hmm. But now this, I'm not talking about being accosted or anything, but that they felt safe, that this was a place that they could be, that they could meet.
Right. A safe place always conducts an air of education. Mm-hmm. So when you feel safe, you have an easier time to learn.
Yeah.
So we've talked about like what you've done in the past and what you're doing now. Do you have any plans for the future? You seem like you're just not slowing down.
No. Well, a lot of my plans for the future are tempered right now. I am the oldest of six. And even though my parents have other siblings near them, they still tend to rely on my assistance. And my parents are 90 and 94, so they require a lot of attention. And so a lot of times I might be asked to sit on some committee that does not necessarily have a regular schedule of any kind or something, and I'm saying no because I never know. Like even today I was at a meeting with John at lunchtime and my mom calls. She went in to see the doctor and she's feeling better. I didn't know she was sick, and so I said, okay, Mom. She says, are you coming this weekend? And I'm saying, oh, how about maybe Sunday? She said, okay, because I have something Friday and Saturday. So I'm really at their call right now, and see, whatever they need, I feel like I have to deal with family first. So yeah, right now the future's like that. And then of course I have my aunts in Texas. They want me to go see them, and I'm looking at airfares, and they're very high. And so I'm thinking, do I drive?
Yeah, that's a long trip though.
Yeah, it is. But we used to do it twice a year.
Yeah.
Every year. And even after we got married, we used to go see my grandmother because she lived to be 101.
That's how old my great grandfather is now.
Well, yeah. And so, for Thanksgiving, every Thanksgiving we spend it in Texas. And so we would drive down there and come back, and because it was a nice enough, long enough weekend that we could have the kids miss one day of school or something. And we would all go down there for Thanksgiving. So after she passed away, we kind of stopped that. But it was no big deal because we had done it all of our lives, just traveling back and forth.
Right.
Yeah, so. But now my mom doesn't like to travel. My dad says, well, if you go, I'll go. But he won't get on the plane.
No.
He said that people weren't meant to fly. And I says, but we were meant to drive in cars. But he still says no flying. No.
So do you think you see yourself continuing
my commitments for now?
For what you're in now?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Very, very few times do they involve weekends. And when they do, I try to do, like if I go Friday, Saturday, and come back, Saturday, or if I have a commitment on the weekend, then I try to go Sunday, Monday, and stuff like that. So that, it works out eventually. Sometimes there's a little stress.
Oh, yeah. Especially, now that you're vice chairman instead of
chair,
that makes it a little easier.
And that the comité now has less activities, as when I first started. When I first started, we had we had a Christmas activity, we had a summer activity, we had the parade, we had the festival. So we had a whole bunch of other things that we were doing. And now, part of it has to do with volunteers, but now we only have the parade. So February, March, we start that process, and it goes through May. And then we're done with that. So that's less commitment that I need to give to that organization.
Yeah. What are some of the goals that you have for this upcoming year? Have you thought about them yet?
I'm looking to see if we can find a location for Raíces Mexicanas to practice and maybe even have small shows and workshops, because we're always at the schedule of wherever we are. Right now we practice at Patton Park. During the school year it's very difficult, and actually during the summer too, because their hours they close very early, and the kids get out of school, parents get out of work and bring them around 5, but then they close at 7, and so it's limited in the number of hours that we have. And right now we have about 35 kids in the group, so trying to get those schedules together. So, but if we had our own place, then we would be able to meet different days and do different, break them up so
right.
that we would be able to give them the time that they need, because they all want to be performing.
Of course they do.
They started last week and they think they're going to perform next week.
So if you broke down the parade and the festivities to someone who's never seen it before, mm-hmm. how would you describe it?
The activities, the event itself, or the process?
Either or both.
The process starts with deciding, the date is always picked for us. It's the closest Sunday to the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And so that date is always a given. But we start by revising the application and having everybody look it over and make sure that it's something that we decide. Last year we raised the price for the first time in a few years, and so we have to decide that part to see if we're going to, how much of a fee do we want to get. So we check our finances to see, how much our insurance has gone up to. And also then to see who's going to do what, who's going to do the application, who's going to do different parts of getting the information. Once we have the application, then we start publicizing that these applications can be picked up at certain places, and that they're due a certain date, and so on and so forth. And that process starts, and we have to also make sure that we put in a petition to the city that we want to have a parade. And usually that's tricky, we do the application for participants, or do we do the city? Since we've been doing it for a long time, we kind of do it hand in hand, because for the most part, they will approve us, maybe with a few more regulations, but for the most part, they do approve us since we've been doing it forever. Mm-hmm. So we kind of do it like we submit the application 1 week and then the applications for participants the following week. And so that process, and we all pick them up on a weekly basis from the locations and pay the insurance, make sure everything is set, deal with the police department, technical services, and also with the company now, we have to pay for our own barriers, street barriers.
Oh, okay.
So we have to contact and do a RFP from different companies to see who gives us a better price.
The city doesn't provide barriers?
They used to, but they don't anymore. So we have to pay for that. That's one of our biggest expenses. We also do some port-a-johns, stuff like that, and work with, meet with other organizations in the area that are going to help us be kind of co-sponsor to pick up the trash or to have trash barrels around, EMS to make sure we have an emergency component. And that's ongoing. And then the day of the event, we need to have about 50 volunteers. Some of them are, lining up the people, and also along the route to make sure that there's not too much lag time between units. That has always been a problem, and hopefully this year we can get the help of a couple of bicycle clubs that can go up and down the line to make sure that people are moving. Because part of it is that some floats or some groups like to show off, and people are clapping, so they stop and perform. Mm-hmm. Well, if you stop and perform, everybody behind you lags, and everybody in front of you is gone. So
yeah. You
have to kind of make sure that happens. But that's a little bit of what happened. Last year we had an incident where there was some family feuding, and there was a shooting, and it stopped the parade halfway. But we had a community meeting. We invited the community to see what's happening and how can we do it better, or should we do it anymore? And it was overwhelming. There was not one person that said we shouldn't continue with the parade. And they said that, the violence is not going to stop our efforts to celebrate our traditions. So we're going to continue with the program. Unfortunately, the one person did die. I guess it would have happened if they hadn't met there. It would have happened wherever they met.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unavoidable, which is unfortunate.
It's unfortunate, but I mean, the marathon in Boston didn't stop because of the bombing. So
absolutely.
We have to call on.
And your traditions are important. Mm-hmm. You need to celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then once it's over, then we do the debriefing and whatever we could have done better, not done this or whatever. And then we say, thank God, it's over. Next year.
What are some of the festivities that happen in the park?
They have a Puerto Rican festival that just started a couple years ago, so they do that. The Head Start program does Dia de los Niños. A Day of the Children, and I think that's celebrated in a lot of places because Ann Arbor does it too in their school system, and so they have a festival there too. Sometimes impromptu things, there's community groups, youth groups that do presentations there. They just have a brand new bandstand that got, not brand new, it got remodeled. They fixed up all the cracks and painted it and whatever, so sometimes they just come out there and start performing, and the community comes in.
So gets involved.
Gets involved. Yeah, you see something going on. This year, City Councilwoman Raquel Castaneda did a procession for Day of the Dead. And that's a little bit closer to the tradition of what happens in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That people come and they do, like, it's like a parade, but it's a procession with artifacts that they want to bring to the altar or to the gravesite. And so they did that around Clark Park, and then they had an altar over there by the Clark Park Coalition building. And people were able to leave some offerings for their memories of the people that had gone on. And they had entertainment. They had a Native American come in and do the blessing of the grounds, and then they had readings and performances. So it was kind of nice.
Sounds nice.
Yeah. Cold. Very cold. But it's nice. The procession is very key, because a lot of times you only do parts of the celebration. And this time I think it was pretty complete. Yeah. They had chocolate.
Yeah. It's what you get for being in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Well,
here we are.
Do your children and grandchildren live around here, or are they scattered?
I have one son in Pittsburgh, one in Houston, a daughter in Phoenix, and then one here in Michigan. They live here in Detroit, and then they moved to Dearborn Heights, but they're here more than they are there, because they work in Detroit. And of course, the kids are involved in different events and committees and activities here in Southwest Detroit, so they come here too.
So they picked up on your
your
love of committees?
No? Not love. They think it's a duty and responsibility to help Grandma do this. But I think in the long run, I think they really enjoy it. When, you know, getting there is half the battle. Like getting to church, once you're there, you feel good. Mm-hmm. But just getting there, it's the same thing with them. I says, once they get here, I know the youngest one of my grandchildren that lives here. She was born in this, she lived here in Detroit for most of her early life. She's 13. She still misses a lot of the stuff. One of the things that she misses is that after school, they had these Doritos. It's a Mexican thing that they put hot sauce on it. Mm-hmm. It's like a Funyun, but it's more, it's got a different flavor. Anyway, she misses that. She always wants. She says, I can't find any Doritos over here. And I says, well, you have to come to the Southwest Detroit. The other thing that they miss is the paletas in the summer, the ice cream trucks. The paletas, it has the flavors like arroz con leche, they have coconut, they have pineapple, but you have pieces of pineapple, and it's a lot stronger taste in the paletas than the ones that you get here. But yeah, they miss that because the cart goes by.
Oh.
And although they have the ice cream truck, they just by and waiting for the paleta. Yeah, they're really, so those kind of things they miss, right? But they do come down here. Now they're starting to sell some of that stuff in the grocery store in this area, so they can pick it up. So I'll tell you, I don't know, Myers and Kroger's and everybody, they're all buying into making sure they have a section on Hispanic foods, because you can find just about everything that you want in those stores. They even have the Jarrito pop. It's a soda pop.
Yes.
Yes.
I've had it before.
Yeah. And so they even have those in their stores.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, so I guess we're making an impact somewhere. If nothing else, with our money.
No, I am sure that you're making an impact in the community. After talking with you for the past, whatever it was, however many minutes, it's apparent.
Yeah, and I mean, you go into Sam's Club and they have tortillas. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have the different kinds of foods. I've seen the foods here has expanded, and you'll see their chips all over the place too in different stores. So, I mean, it's something that we're slowly becoming recognized, and our business people are doing a good job of making sure that their products get out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, even with your work, you know, obviously the food, and that's a gateway. Mm-hmm. But your work with the committees and the parades, the festivities, yeah, that's a great way of publishing and networking.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we have continued to try and do is make sure that people get on boards and committees and organizations that are not Latino, because that's where we do some of the education, and that's where they learn about another community, and they can do some other kind of projects that will help the community. So that's why I kind of have mixed Latino boards and non-Latino boards, because a lot of times I'm the only one there. And I wish there were more, but I think that's one way of doing it.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Okay.
And if there's anything that I can do personally, just let me know.
Okay. Well, when you graduate, we'll be looking for you.
Sounds good.
Especially, well, the Clave office is right next door.
Oh, nice.
And so you can look through the window and look at some of the stuff that we did for Day of the Dead.
Yeah, I will, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's been kind of nice to be able to do something like that. And DIA is reaching out more and more to our community. It depends on who the person is that gets assigned to the projects to deal with community, because we had somebody, was it 5-6 years ago, maybe even longer, that did so much with us, and then all of a sudden it was gone. Yeah, in fact, they invited us to perform, was it last year or the year before, for their community outreach. And we got there, and they wanted us to perform for 45 minutes. But they didn't have any place for us to change. They didn't have any of the accommodations or anything. And we ended up dancing outside on the sidewalk.
Oh, no.
And we did it because we were committed to doing it, but they ended up giving us a couple of bathrooms for us to change, and it was a long ways from where we were performing, but it's just people don't think about what is needed, and when you say changing rooms, they say, oh. Okay.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be dancing, and you want us to do a show with different states with the same costume? No. But yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with educating people. Just like we get educated, they need to. It's transferred back and forth.
Yep. The more you know about each other,
the better we can work together.
Yeah,
the kids go through a lot of those changes, and they'll go roll their eyes. Do they know that we need changing rooms? Do they know we need music?
Yeah.
The last time we
would think?
Yeah, we went this last time to the DIA for the Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't hook up the music. Luckily for us, we had a series of dances that require no music. It's just the shoe,
mm-hmm,
just the sound of the shoes making the music. So that's what we did, because they didn't provide for the music. We had it all there ready to plug in, and they said, oh.
Yeah.
So we tried to accommodate.
Do the best you can.
With what we have.
Yep.
Better next year.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
I hope I didn't babble too much.
Oh, no. I hope I didn't keep you from your coffee.
Oh, no. I drink it hot, cold, or whatever.
Caffeine is a necessity, especially in college.
Yes.
And when you do so much.
I've been drinking coffee since I was very young, so it's not something, you know, when we worked in the migrant fields, we had little, I guess you would call them cabins,
mm-hmm,
but they're not. They're housing that the Michigan Sugar Company provided for us here in Michigan. Different places provide you with these little huts, and we lived in one, and my grandmother lived in right next door, and my other grandmother lived in the other ones. So there was always this family exchange back and forth. So, you know, one grandma used to baby me a lot, and so was the first granddaughter. And if I wanted coffee, she'd give me coffee. but it was mostly milk. Uh-huh. And stuff like that. So, you know, it's been part of me. I think when I don't have it, I probably go crazy. But no, those, it was interesting during those years. You know, we didn't think about it. We traveled all the time and the housing and whatever. We had a house in Texas, mm-hmm. But not when we traveled to different places. And never did I ever feel like I was poor, nor did my siblings. Mm-hmm. They never felt we were poor. We got to travel. We got to see all kinds of stuff. We worked hard and, you know, we got rewarded. When I got to high school, in one of the classes, they were talking about migrants and Michigan Sugar, of course, here in Michigan. And then I said, you know, that I worked in there. And one of my girlfriends says, "Oh, I didn't know you were poor." And I'm saying, "I wasn't. I wasn't. I wasn't." Yeah. And I says, "You know, all the experiences that I had, you guys didn't get."
Right.
Yeah, but it was interesting. But the notion that if you do a certain kind of work, you're poor. But I tell you, plumbers are the richest guys I know. Try and buy one. Try to get something for less than $90 an hour.
Uh-huh.
Well, maybe a lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
Plumbers are up there.
Plumbers
are up there.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, but it's been a fun life.
It's always great when you can look back and not have regrets. You just have memories.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there are some things that I would have done different now with what I know now. Mm-hmm. But hey, you know, that's part of life.
Yeah. Hindsight's always 20/20.
Yeah. That's right.
Like, oh, coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Should I got married at 19? I don't know. Should I finish my college first? Yeah. But then you look at, you know, would I have these 4 kids? No. Yeah, so.
Count your blessings.
Yeah. Count what you have.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome. You have a piece of this.